Mikey's Breakfast on Brentwood Billericay's Phoenix FM. It's a wonderful sunny Friday morning. On the phone right now, I've got Mr. Raghu Vinchelaruvu. I'm going to try and pronounce it. He's from, as a consultant neurosurgeon from the Nuffield Hospital, who are one of our sponsors here at Phoenix FM. Now, can I call you Mr. V?
Good morning, Mike. Yes, long name, Mr. Raghu Vinchelaruvu, but everyone for many, many years has always referred to me as Mr. V, and I'm very happy with that. Thank you.
Fantastic. That's nice and makes my job a lot simpler then. And I don't look so stupid. Now, consultant neurosurgeon. What does a consultant neurosurgeon actually do?
Okay, good, great question. So traditionally, a lot of our work has been dealing with surgical conditions of the brain.
Yeah.
And neurosurgical services have always been set up based on the need to deal with trauma. So in other words, patients having head injury, and that relates to a range of things like falls, assaults, and road traffic accidents. And so the spread of the units across the country relates to dealing with head injury primarily. However, most of our operating work is related to brain tumors and vascular conditions like aneurysms and vascular malformations, which can cause brain hemorrhages, bleeds in the brain. And then there's a condition called hydrocephalus, which relates to water on the brain. So that's the bulk of our work. However,
now, sorry, go on.
What a lot of people don't realize is that we're specialists for spinal conditions as well.
Oh, really?
A lot of people will go to orthopedics, but in the UK, very few orthopedic surgeons will look after back patients at all, and a very tiny fraction will do surgery. So in recent years, the field has expanded a lot, and there's a lot of working collaboratively between neurosurgeons and orthopedic surgeons. But a lot of the delicate work is certainly done by us, and all neurosurgeons are very capable with most conditions of the spine.
I never realized that. So do you have to study in spine as well as neurosurgery, or just the neurosurgery covers it?
Oh, absolutely. The basic neurosurgical training has got perhaps 7 or 8 different subspecialties within it. And spine is a very big component. And most neurosurgical units in the country, the bread and butter work is spine. And we're talking about these patients who've got neck pain, degenerative or wear and tear, arthritic conditions, which cause pressure on either the spinal cord or nerve roots, which need surgery. And then obviously the lower back pains and the sciaticas that everyone is familiar with.
Now, what is sciatica? Because I suffer with that every now and again. I know it's a nerve, but how do you actually damage it?
The sciatic nerve is actually made up of a number of different nerve roots coming out in the lower 5 segments of the lumbar spine. That's the bottom part of the spine. So the analogy I often draw is, if you think about the traffic on the A12, it's made up of all the traffic coming down a number of slip roads. And so all of those nerve fibers are carrying messages from the brain down to the leg and from the leg up back to the brain. And a lot of people suffer sciatica. And in many cases, it's because of a disc prolapse. And that sounds horrendous, but if we rephrase it as a slip disc or disc herniation, prolapse disc, they all mean the same thing. They're not different severities, if you like. And the good news for most patients is that discs heal. In the vast majority of cases, within 6 weeks, 60% of patients will be properly better.
Oh, wow.
And if you double that time to 3 months, 80% are better. And so our duty is to try and get patients back to good health, active, in the quickest way and the safest way as possible. And so surgery is reserved for only a small number of cases. The therapy is very, very important in the management, and good and sensible pain relief in order to facilitate the exercise program. And after simple medications, injections have a very important role to play. And some important studies were reported last year, which have been a game changer in the field.
Wow, fantastic. I mean, it's great that so many people recover so quickly. Around about 5 years ago, I had the opportunity to visit neurosurgeons because I had a venous sinus thrombosis, and the amount of effect that one little blood clot gave me is that I was getting double vision, I was having stroke-like symptoms. Is it difficult to diagnose from the outside, or do you rely on CAT scans and the so on and so forth?
That's a really good question, and it sounds like you've made a great recovery, which is excellent news. So it was clearly picked up very quickly. Venous sinus thrombosis is a very important condition, and it came to light to the public, I think, through the pandemic, because a number of young patients who were getting the AstraZeneca vaccine were getting problems with bleeding concurrent to a venous thrombosis. So it's a very, very difficult condition to manage. And sadly, we saw a number of patients who did very badly coming in with both clots in their veins and hemorrhage in the brain.
Oh, wow.
So that's a very, you know, a lot of stuff was learned very, very quickly because of this really important condition. And as a National Society of Neurosurgeons, we had a very key role to play in this. And of course, the hematologists, the blood doctors, were the most important in that. But it's an interesting question that you pose, because the key thing with any condition when you're assessing a patient is to get accurate details in order to make a clinical diagnosis. And then it's a matter of getting the correct test in the correct time frame in order to confirm that diagnosis. And the reason a diagnosis is so important is because once you know what a patient has, then you know how that condition generally behaves, and you know the different treatment options. And that's why I spend a lot of time when I'm assessing patients talking and, more importantly, listening to what they're telling me. Because if you probe, they have all the answers.
Yeah.
And we've always said about 80% of diagnoses are made simply by talking and listening to a patient.
Oh, really?
Then examination adds a bit, and the tests, you have to do the right test. And once you have the diagnosis, then the rest is so much easier, because you know what your treatment strategies are going to be. And then we come into what you like, if you want to call the consent process, which is more than simply signing a form. And these days, we've moved away from a situation where doctors are telling patients, you must have this treatment or that treatment. Very much it's open dialogue. And I end up seeing patients, once I make the diagnosis, pretty much an entire consultation is spent on discussing the range of options, the pros and cons of each way of treating a condition. And then patients need a cooling down period because there's an awful lot of information to digest.
Yeah, it is.
Ultimately, they do look at us as specialists to check what is, in our opinion, the recommended way forward. And that makes a lot of sense. And I try and steer clear of a situation where I say, here are your four options, which one would you like? Rather, I say, here are the pros and cons of each of these options, and I would favour this one for the following reasons. However, this one and this one are also legitimate. So that way, really engaging with the patient. And, and I very much like it when relatives are present because they can take on board the information, and then they can go away and discuss it and come back with their selection, if you like. And one of the things that we've seen with COVID is remote consultations are in.
Yeah.
And often I have patients sitting with me in clinic and on a speakerphone, a relative who may be taking a break from work or in the other side of the country or even abroad, and they can listen in and help the patient decide which treatment to go for.
Well, that's quite a good thing that you sit and talk to them rather than dictating to them what they should do. I could carry on speaking to you all day. You are a fascinating man, and the subject about the brain is absolutely fascinating me. But unfortunately, we've come to the end of this little conversation. Hopefully, you'll come back on sometime in the future. Is that okay?
I'd very much look forward to that, and perhaps we can talk about different conditions in some detail.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for calling in today.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Mike. I very much enjoyed it.